tuned into Paradigm Shifters. Good evening, everyone. And the Paradigm Shifter I have on hand, somebody who came to visit us tonight, is very, very special. And since, well, I'm sure much longer, but since What the Bleep and Through the Biology of Belief, Bruce Lipton has been herding us up and down the alleys of what? Evolution. And he's going to be here tonight talking with us about spontaneous evolution and everything else we can get him to talk about. So welcome to the show, Bruce.
Oh, thank you so much, Veronica. I so appreciate this opportunity because it's a great time to be interested in what's going on.
Well, I'm thinking that spontaneous evolution, which is the name of Bruce and Steve Behrman's latest book, and it's a very wonderful. It reminds me of spontaneous combustion. So
well,
I want you
it's going to fire up just like that, you know, and it's interesting because we have a perception that we've held for forever, you know, about evolution takes millions of years of infinitely small changes and you don't see what's happening, and over a billion years then something happens, and it's like that is actually a total mistake and a misunderstanding, because evolution actually goes in big jumps, and so that it's not like, oh, we're just going to see something gradual. The evolution that's in front of us, for example, will be jumping within the year or next year. That's there's going to be just a revolution here, and it's not a slow, gradual process. It's going to be now.
And it's also up, as you keep saying, it's up to us as well how to steer this jump, right?
Well, yeah, the interesting part about this evolution is that you might be thinking, oh, well, the evolution of humans, and then I really love the joke because futurists, you know, planning what would humans look like, especially about like 30 or 40 years ago when I remember them talking about the world of computers. And they said, we're going to have, as a result of this, we're going to have like smaller bodies and bigger heads. And it turns out it's absolutely just the other way around. With all the computers, we've got a lot bigger bodies and smaller heads happening. But that futurism was a bit off because the human is not evolving. That already happened. What's evolving is the organization of humans. It's a reality that we're forming the equivalent of a multicellular organism, and that this organism is called humanity. And each one of us turns out to be a cell in the body of this evolving structure. And basically says, well, what does that mean for us? And basically says, look, we've been living lives of individual, personal, you know, experience, the kind of Darwinian thing where it's the individual, the survival of the fittest, you know.
The rugged individualist.
Yeah, and basically it turns out that is actually not evolution at all. Evolution is based on cooperation and community. And obviously, the way we've been running our world, we have lost the concept of cooperation and community, and in the process have destroyed the environment. So we're being pushed to make a change in our lives. And as you mentioned, this evolution is not a passive armchair process that we're going to sit around in the living room and turn on the TV and watch the evolution unfold. This is an active, participatory evolution that each one of us is engaged in going through a process of recovering our tremendous powers that most of us only imagine, when it turns out we are so powerful and have made ourselves so fragile by our belief system, that when we change these beliefs, we will re-empower ourselves. And because basically the very simple truth, everyone is creating their personal reality. And that actually,
so let me ask you this.
Yeah.
Are we creating it faster than we ever did before? And is there a structure in our, is a cellular thing that's unleashing now, creating a faster evolution? Or are you saying we're just waking up and it's an externally derived thing?
Well, it's a waking up, but it's also facilitated by tremendous technological advances that include the Internet.
Mm-hmm.
And the significance of this is that when I talk about in the lectures, I frequently show a picture of iron filings and sprinkle them into a magnetic field.
Right.
And what I show is that the organization of the particles, the filings, is not anything built into the particles. The organization of the particles is a reflection of the field. And so the point of why I do this in the lecture is a supportive statement by Einstein saying that the field is the sole governing agency of matter. And why that's important is the invisible stuff is shaping the physical world, which includes consciousness and mind. And why this is relevant is because when I use that example, usually what I talk about is, so the field is really manipulating the particles. What I don't really mention is that every little particle has an effect on the field, but it's negligible. It's an infinitesimal small thing, so you don't even count it. Every particle is essentially moved by the field, and we won't talk about the particle influencing the field because the influence is so weak. And then I say, now, and this is relevant to our point in our evolution, I say, well, yes, every particle has a minute influence on the field, but what if you took all the iron particles and squeezed them together and then gave them a coherent information, something, you know, aligned them, right? Well, if you do that, what you've actually done is you've taken the iron filing, squeezed them together, you made a magnet. And the relevance about the magnet is in this form, the iron filings can profoundly change the field. And so you say, so what does that mean for us? So I say, well, up to now, we've been acting as individual iron filings and being shifted around by the field. And yet, with the development of, like, the Internet and the opportunity for mass communications, each of the individual filings are getting some similar kinds of ideas. And as they start to share their ideas, that means that they become more aligned. And as they become more aligned, the more coherent, the more that negligible effect turns into a profound, powerful, altering the field effect. And so it says, what's the evolution? Well, instead of acting as individuals, we come together as one whole. And that would be the equivalent of taking all the iron filings and putting them into one big magnet. And as one whole, our consciousness can actually change the world around us. And this is part of our necessary evolution, is to recover our power of creation.
So do you think that's what's coming up in the jump, is that we're actually going to be coherent and cohesive?
Well, the net result, it has to be coherent. The jump that's immediately in front of us is, you remember there was that kid thing, which is probably still out there, called Etch-a-Sketch.
Yes.
A little television window, and you move the dials and you create an image. And then all of a sudden you shake the image and the whole thing is gone.
Right.
And then you can make a new image again.
Right.
We are in an Etch-a-Sketch moment here. And what's happening, and this is, and it's very important, Veronica, that people understand this, because if you look at the world and you see all the crises, you can be overwhelmed. You could sit there and think, oh my God, this thing is so out of control.
The money thing that's gone back into the similar hands to what it was before. That's the sort of thing people are concerned about.
Absolutely, because what's really necessary, and why all these crises show up at the same time, it's not an accident. It's not just a coincidence, is that every crisis that's facing us, from the economic to the government to the healthcare crisis to the global food crisis, and I go on and on, all of them are reflecting one big thing that science has recognized, and that is this, that because of the way we have been living on this planet and treating nature and treating ourselves, we are actually destroying the environment and threatening our own extinction at this moment. In fact, science has recognized that we're not flirting with a mass extinction. We're actually deep into it. Five previous mass extinctions essentially wiped out life on the planet and then started all over again from whatever was left over, the pieces. And the five previous ones, science has attributed to things like comets or asteroids hitting the planet and throwing the environment into upheaval and wiping out life. And here's the interesting one. The sixth mass extinction, the one that we're in, science has also recognized that the principal cause is human behavior.
Huh.
And so the relevance says, then what we are doing and the way we are living and carelessly, you know, ignoring the environment, ignoring the relationship of community and cooperation as a drive force, we have thrown a monkey wrench into what was a harmonious environment. And have disturbed the environment to the extent that it's dropping out, the organisms are dropping out quickly and threatening our own extinction. And then you say, well, how are we going to recover? And the answer is simple. And it's actually, I'll give a quote from Albert Einstein, which I really like. And the quote is, you cannot solve the problems with the same thinking that created them.
That's right.
And what that means is, I look at every institution from academia to healthcare to government to the economy, and everything in between, every institution that's here, it was developed to support the belief systems that we're living by.
Right.
And the issue is, well, yeah, but those are the institutions whose way of life is causing us to go extinct. And basically, it says, so you want to survive? Well, then we have to think differently, and we cannot use these institutions anymore because they are the cause of the problem. So when you say, well, what does that mean? I say, the Etch-a-Sketch shake is that the institutions crash. Mm-hmm. Now, if you're part of the world and you're holding on to the institutions as this is life, well, then I'm sorry, this is a really scary time because those institutions are not going to exist. And the reason is very important because they're responsible for our own extinction. So basically it says we must reorganize the way we live, communicate, work with each other, work with the planet, and have our relationships with the rest of the world because we're one giant organism. We're all cells into this body. And we have to start to recognize our coherence and coming together to support the whole.
And there's got to be a reverence for our individual, there's going to be a reverence for our life, which I think a lot of us don't have unless we've got money, status, blah, blah, blah. I think
Well, that's the unfortunate part of the, see, that's part of the thinking of the world that we live in. See, we live in a world based on what's called materialism, scientific materialism. The previous version of civilization, which ended about 1860 when Charles Darwin came in, the previous version was a civilization run by the church. And the church was preoccupied and focused on spirituality and visible stuff, okay? And in fact, they used to think the world, the physical planet, you know, don't get involved with it because it will keep you from going to that invisible spiritual realm up in the sky. So the physical world was shunned. You know, I mean, Opus Dei people would beat themselves till they bled because they didn't want, if you felt good, that meant you might be attracted to staying here on the planet. So, you know, it was that kind of belief system. So we believed in a more spiritual world. And when Darwin came in, that civilization ended. The church was no longer, after Darwin, the church was no longer the truth provider for our world. Science became the truth provider. Before Darwin, you had an issue with your health, you go to the priest. After Darwin, you have an issue with your health, you go to the doctor. Because now we look at this biology as a machine. It's biochemicals and genes, and just by genetic crapshoot. That's how we got here. It was just shooting the dice, and look how we got here by accident. That's our belief system. All of that is wrong.
And it really here's another thing that I got from your book. I was really paying attention to the fact that when the interests or the political interests or the financial interests didn't like a discovery, then the discovery was squashed or the discovery was moved aside. I think it was talking about Lamarck.
Isn't that like today?
Yeah, exactly.
Actually, a couple of days ago was a wonderful article about the swine flu. Mm-hmm. And this epidemiologist, a very, very real, true scientist, and clinically, accurate, did an assessment, about the swine flu and came out with the fact that, there's actually a far fewer number of real swine flu cases than anybody is saying. And they wanted to put it into a journal. The editors of the journal said, we don't believe it. It was like they looked at the statistics and it's just like, no, we just don't believe it. And this is a real person doing real work. They didn't want to see it. Hmm. And because they already have a vision of this whole thing about this big epidemic and all that. So, this paper comes out. It's a real scientific paper and challenges a statement. And the editors of the journal decide personally not to print it because personally they didn't believe it. They just couldn't see it as being real, so they ignored it.
Well, and when I was in radio years ago, just for a short period of time, but I was shocked to find out that the news that's on the air was what they chose as being marketable, but not necessarily what was actually going on out there.
Oh, God, no, and it's so unfortunate.
That was a bit iconoclastic for me, but it's the same subject, isn't it?
Exactly. You see, here's interesting point. People are a little edgy today everywhere.
I'll
tell you why. There's a reason. It's called the biological imperative. The biological imperative is this. Every living organism, from bacteria to humans, has an innate built-in drive to survive. Biologists don't know where or how it's manifest, but you can observe it. That means if you try to kill a bacterium, it will not sit there and let you try and kill it. It will do everything it can to stay alive. It will do every maneuver possible. And so what it basically says is every organism on this planet has a sense of a potential threat to their survival. And upon that, having that threat, their biology will amp up and start to get them in a protective state so they're ready to do something about it. So we're amping up because everyone's feeling, okay, hey, survival is questionable at this point and everything's going on. Well, you know, it works the same thing for corporations, which are living entities in a sense. And what's the relevance? Well, the big corporations like the pharmaceutical company especially, and now the health insurance people are beginning to realize that their days are probably numbered right now. And they're becoming more aggressive as the end is, you know, visible on the horizon, more aggressive to keep hold of their what they've been doing. It's sort of like the dinosaurs. Yes, they were coming to an end, but that didn't make them happy campers. That just irritated them even more. And we're getting this push now from the institutions that want to keep us where we've been. Well, in the process, people are letting go of these beliefs that have held them and like captive in a sense. You know, it's interesting because people have seen this movie, which most people have, called The Matrix.
Right.
We are truly exactly in The Matrix.
Yay!
And it's time to wake up. And both the biology belief and spontaneous evolution both emphasize a very important fact that when we were children, before we were six, we were at a programmable stage of development where the nervous system is in a hypnagogic trance. And the significance is you can't be conscious, a child can't be conscious unless it has data to be conscious about. I mean, think about a baby's just born and you say, oh, you're just born, tell me something. And the baby, if it could say something, would say, look, I don't know what to say. I just got here. I don't know anything. And so a baby cannot be conscious until it gets data. So we now know the first 6 years, the brain operates at a lower EEG frequencies, mainly theta, which is a hypnagogic trance. So you can download how to be on this planet, how a family operates. Who's the father and mother? What are their roles? How do they behave? What are they, you know, what's their lifestyle? We download all that. And we learn from the culture and the community. So basically it says the fundamental beliefs we get from life are not something that we consciously were creating or aware of. It was just downloaded into us, okay? Well, and so I come up with a statement that some people out of the audience might be quite aware of. I say, for over 1,000 years, the Jesuits were very proud of a fact. They would say, you show me the child and I will give you the man. Or another thing they would say is, you know, give me a child until it's six, and it will belong to the church for the rest of its life. What they were actually talking about was this stuff that is in the new biology now, is the fact, yes, the first 6 years is programming from the outside by other people. And that this becomes the fundamental, when we run our lives, these are the fundamental programs that are operating 95% of the time. So whatever we downloaded, we become.
Well, Bruce, where do we download? Do we also download from the etheric or from the soul journey or from spirit?
Well, when we become conscious, we start to do that. In the first 6 years, it's really just putting basic understandings about life, language, communication, skills, everything we need to be part of a world. We have to learn it from the community. So evolution evolved the brain to take those 6 years and do that as a download so you become part of the community and not just a pinball that's bouncing all over the place. No, you become programmed to become part of the community by observing everyone around you for the first 6 years. And this is where the Matrix comes in. And it basically says this. If I can program you to disempower you for the first 6 years, then the rest of your life you're disempowered. And if I also then tell you what I think the way life should be, and you buy that as your program, then you will manifest, because remember, we're creating our own individual lives. And spontaneous evolution brings out the fact again that as individuals, personally, individually, we have very negligible effect on the unfolding of the world as it is. But as we become part of a culture, part of a mass group, and we share common beliefs, then that negligible effect as an individual turns out to be a profoundly powerful effect when exercised by larger numbers. So that a culture that says we live in a Darwinian world that's based on a struggle for survival, well, that's a belief system. And guess what? We manifest it, and then we look around and say, yep, that's because we live in a Darwinian world. It's like, no, you created this. Because it's not a Darwinian world. It's a belief system that has taken us off. And
well, but Bruce, you can change the belief structures that were...
Of course! That's what the evolution is all about, because if you don't change the belief structure, then you will manifest the programming that you've been programmed with already, which is the world as it is right now, that is driving us to the edge of this thing. And if you don't change that, then you will follow that line and go toward the end that way. The way out, as I said, was a participatory evolution. The first thing is to recognize, wait a minute, I am more powerful than anyone has ever led on to me, and I need to get my power back. And the fact is, well, that's why understanding how you lost your power is relevant to the story of, like, the Matrix. We lost it because we got programmed by others about how life should be, and then we manifest life, and then we say, yeah, that's just as we expected. It's like, no, that's what you created. And so if we change our perceptions, change the way we respond to life, and that's pulling out of the Matrix. That means as they try to push your buttons, you know, that old saying, that guy pushed my buttons and then, like, my behavior ran away. Right. It's like, well, that's true, because those are the behavioral programs. And when people push your button, then you're actually being carried away by a program, and you're not, you're playing out somebody else's program, that whoever programmed you. And so what we need to do is recover this power and create this world. And it's interesting. Truth, every one of us is creating the world that we live in, and collectively we're creating the world that we all see. And then people would say, but Bruce, I would never have created this. I wouldn't have done this in my own life. And I go, yeah, I know, but the problem is your conscious mind is your creative mind, and your subconscious mind, the one that gets programmed, is the mind that actually runs the show 95% of the time. So it basically says, about 5% of the time, you're operating consciously and going in the direction that you want out of your life. And 95% of the time, you're unconsciously playing programs that you were downloaded with before you were 5 or 6. And manifesting that, and you don't see it. And therefore, the big catch. Mm. I didn't create this life. Why? Because I wouldn't have done this. And the fact is, not consciously, but unconsciously or subconsciously, you were actually participating in all this because you were playing out programs that you got as a child. And almost all of these are very limiting. When I teach down in New Zealand and Australia, I love it. They have a phrase called cutting the tall poppies, referring to child rearing.
Oh.
And what they mean by that is a gardener plants these poppies, and all the poppies come up to about the same height. And then every now and then, one poppy has its head about 2 feet above all the other poppies. So what does the gardener do? Cuts the head off the tall poppies. Says he wants them all the same height, right?
Right.
When they talk about that in child rearing, which is the same that happens here, but they have a name for it there, what they're talking about is when a child starts to show an exceptional ability, the general tendency of the community or population is to cut the head off and make them everybody average.
Cut them down to size.
Exactly. And so we've all been cut down to size when we all have heads feet above where we are right now.
Well, so when you, Bruce, I don't mean to change the subject. I want to get back to something before you go too far. When you were unfolding this awareness, like what happened to wake you up to it? What are the components of waking up? And
well,
how have you done
it? The first wake up was fighting myself with my own foot in my mouth. And it basically went like this. I saw the scientific aspect of the nature of how the environmental signals program our genetics and program our behaviors.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, we represent a reflection of the experiences of our environment. And when I understood this, I got so excited because I wanted to tell everybody. I said, oh, anytime I could grab enough people to put them together, I said, listen, I got to tell you about this new science. You know why? Because if you understand this new science, you can create a healthy, happy, wonderful life on this planet if you understand the nature of this.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd give my lecture, and about halfway through, I could see most of the people in the audience, their heads would be cocked a little bit, and they go, you know, Lipton, for a guy who says you know this stuff, your life doesn't look that good. And it was like, oh. And I almost heard myself say, I didn't say it exactly, but I might as well, because I said something that meant the same thing. It was sort of, well, don't do as I do, do as I say. And that's when I got caught. And I got caught and I realized, and the big thing that we all have to realize, conscious awareness does not change subconscious programming.
Okay.
And the significance about that is you could go to a psychiatrist and rework your whole life and come out and say, God, now I know what every, my mom did this, my dad, my friends, I see why my life is all messed up. And then I say, great, at this moment you have a complete awareness of why your life was messed up. And guess what? Your life is still messed up. It doesn't change. And that's the problem, even when you find out what was the cause, it doesn't change. Or, more importantly for the audience, you read a self-help book. Consciously, it makes all the sense in the world. It goes, yeah, well, that's really great. But your life didn't change. And the reason is why? Because conscious awareness only runs the show 5% of the time. The subconscious is the one that runs the show 95% of the time, and the primary programs were downloaded from other people. And we don't see these behaviors when we do them. Now, that's the catchy part. So the audience should be familiar with this. I'd say it in a lecture, and it goes like this. I say, you know a friend, a close friend, and you happen to know your friend's parent. And at some point, you see that your friend shares many of the behaviors of their parent. And then you volunteer, right?
Yeah.
You volunteer, and you go, you know, Bill, you're just like your dad. And then
Bill
you back
flips
away.
Out, yeah.
You back away as he vents, like, how can you make that comparison? So obviously,
I thought you were my friend.
That, but here's the point. We're all Bill. And why is that important? Because all of it, what's the story with Bill? Everybody else can see he was playing the program that he got from his parents, but he was the only one who didn't see it. And why? Why? Because it's called subconscious. When you play it, you don't see it.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to tell everyone out there, because I was involved with this up to my own neck, and the reality is we are operating so much of our lives with invisible programs that are, in the raising of the tall poppy nature, limiting, disempowering, and self-sabotaging that we acquired in our development. We do not see these programs, but we walk forward with the belief that, oh, my conscious mind wants to create a great relationship and have health and a great job. And I'm thinking, yeah, that's a great creation of the conscious mind, you know, great wishes, desires, aspirations, conscious mind. I say, that's really cool, but then you're only operating less than 5% of the time from that mind. You're operating 95% to 99% from the habit programs of the subconscious mind, and again, most of them were not even, we weren't even conscious of them when they were even downloaded. Many of them were downloaded even before we were born.
Mm-hmm.
So,
cellular, isn't it? Cellular.
What's that?
It's a lot of it's cellular, isn't it?
Well, it's actually, no, it's really, it's emotional chemicals and body regulatory hormones that you learn from repetitive experiences. And when you're a fetus, what we always talk about is what's the role of the mother in a fetus? Well, she provides the nourishment. The blood goes to the placenta, and then the nourishment is transferred from the mother's side over to the fetus side. And we say, oh yeah, the role of a good mother, well, she eats well and takes vitamins and supplements and exercise, and we say, oh, that she's a great mother. And then it turns out, wait a minute, there's more to blood than nutrition. All of the regulatory and emotional chemicals are in the blood. So if the mother is going through an emotional experience, the chemistry crosses through the placenta. And the fetus, unaware of the details, still has the emotion of anger or happiness or rejection or whatever the mother is feeling, the child will have the exact same feeling. If the mother repeats on a pattern, the child learns the pattern, and when it's born, will have a pattern of behavior without even knowing the words or the interactions involved, will already have the chemistry and organization, the emotions and behaviors already program more or less to respond the way the mother did.
Sounds pretty overwhelming.
Well, it is, and yet, the whole fact is, well, we can say, listen, I don't want to hear about this stuff because it's really scary and I don't feel good about it and all that, and I'm going, well, that's really great, except You need to get out of the matrix. You need to know how it works.
Well, we want to know what you did, Bruce.
Oh, well, there were several different tracks. The first thing, because I didn't know anything other than the fact that I was aware that psychologists tell us that 70% or more of our thoughts are negative and redundant.
Okay.
And these are the subconscious mind thoughts that are just fleeting through your head all the time. Well, if it's subconscious mind, then those thoughts are the ones that are actually manifesting your life. So when you're at the traffic light in your car and you're thinking about, oh, this person, oh, that's not going to work out right, or this can't happen, or this will never be, when those words are being said, you're actually scripting the life that's in front of you with that. And there's a point where if you can just stop and be like a witness to your own thoughts for a moment and go, oh, my God, what am I saying? You know, where, my God, I can't have a great life if you hear those, you know, those, you know, guesses about what was going to happen in the future. They're all so negative and scary. And then they turn out, and it's like, yeah, a new life was going to be like that. And it's like, no, you created life like this. So the first thing was, start to listen to your own thoughts and become aware that your thoughts are a script in action. And if you change these thoughts, you change the script. That's exactly how it works. But you have to be conscious and aware of that. And that's very difficult for most people because our lives get so busy. And you say, well, how come the conscious mind doesn't run at any more than 5%? And the answer is this. The conscious mind is unique because it can go into the future. It can go back into the past. It can solve problems. It can do all these things. The subconscious mind is like a jukebox. It's got tape in it. You push the button, play the tape, and there's no future or past. If you recorded it when you're 4 years old and now you're 40 and you push the button, it's the same tape. You're still playing the same tape. It's present time always. That's the way it is. So the nature of the mind is if the conscious mind starts to divert its attention from a task or whatever's going on, the subconscious mind will automatically take over the task, but will do it based on the programming of how that, you know, that task was downloaded in the first place. So basically it says that as you're thinking, let's say, here's a great example. If you've driven a car for a while, imagine this, and you've probably been there. You're driving the car. You have a friend in the passenger seat. You get very involved in a discussion with this person. And at some point, it dawns on you, you actually haven't paid attention to the road for the last 5 or so minutes. Okay, see, that's what I'm saying. Now, but here's the catch. This is, and if you understand it, it's like a simple explanation. It goes like this. Can you tell me what was in the conversation you just had? And you would say, sure, I talk about this, this, and this. And I said, okay, during the same time, tell me about what was going on the road while you were driving. And you'll go, I don't know, I wasn't paying attention. And I said, yeah, but you drove the car very well. And it's like, yeah, the subconscious drove the car. It's a million times more powerful than the conscious mind anyway. So it's actually more, you know, the subconscious is the best mind to handle the car driving. But the point about it is a lesson. And it says this. When your conscious mind is focused on the topic, the discussion, then the subconscious mind takes over all the other responsibilities. But when the subconscious mind takes it over, you're not conscious of it. You can't tell me what happened during the driving part. You weren't conscious of it. So I'm saying, yeah, but your subconscious was doing a behavior. If you were taught by a bad driver, your driving lessons were from a bad driver, and they had their 1 foot on the gas and 1 on the brake all the time. That would mean when you're not paying attention, you would continuously have 1 foot on the brake and 1 foot on the gas, and you'd be destroying the vehicle. But you wouldn't see it. It would just be an audit. That's just the way you're driving. You don't even notice it. It's just invisible. And what I'm saying is that in our programming, our driver education came from those around us. And if we didn't get the best driving skills, then we're thinking a thought or trying to solve something or a fleeting moment comes into your consciousness. Every time your consciousness gets engaged with a task like that, it's not strictly paying attention to what's going on. And it is those moments that the system will automatically kick in the autopilot, the subconscious, and your behavior will play, but it will be whatever program that you got that will play.
Now, when we do this huge jump, which you were talking about, what happens to the subconscious?
the subconscious is reprogrammable, and this is the fun part, because I think we really give the subconscious such a bad name. You know, everyone's like, oh, the font of hell, you know, the darkest bad doo-doo is in there, you know.
Well, that's probably true, right?
And the reality is, the simple truth is, the subconscious mind is like a cold steel tape player. It records a program, it plays it back. And the significance is, well, if you get crappy programs and you play them back, then you get a crappy life. But what if you got good programs? What if you were, I mean, you know, I think there's a book called Rich Dad, Poor Dad.
Yes, and there sure is.
And basically what it talks about is, if you grew up in a poor family, your fundamental programs that you downloaded with before you were six would be those programs that would ensure you that you will stay in that poverty. And the rich kids grew up in a family where all the way they behaved and all the programs that the kid downloaded from their family would ensure that they ended up being a rich person. And the interesting part is, both these people from the poor and from the rich family could go out and daydream their life away, and the one from the rich family, after daydreaming, will still be rich, and the daydreaming poor guy will still be poor, because 95% of our life came from that programming. And so instead of blaming the subconscious, it's really no blame at all, because our teachers are
blame our parents.
Yeah, but they were programmed by their parents and their community, who was programmed by their parents and their community. So, you know, where did the original glitch come in? Well, who cares? It's so far back now, it's irrelevant. But the thing that you're trying to get me to say, and it's skirting the issue, is you can stop this at any time you want, but you have to be conscious.
Mm.
And I want to let people know that most people out there in the audience, just a suggestion. I will suggest that there was a time in your life where you actually did run your life with consciousness. And at that moment, which I'll tell you in a minute, I would suggest if you go back to it, you would probably say you were the healthiest, the happiest, you enjoyed life so much you didn't even want to sleep, because it was unfolding, was heaven on earth. And I'm going to say, so when was that time period? And then I'm going to say, go back to some point in your life where you fell head over heels in love with somebody. And it was this big love affair honeymoon thing that kicked off this whole thing. And I'll say, during that honeymoon, during this initial love period where you were so excited about life, were you healthy? Yeah, probably very. Did you have energy? You probably made love for days, you know. Were you happy? Unbelievably happy. And was, if you looked at life at that moment, you would probably say it was heaven on earth. And now what I'm going to tell you is, that was not an accident. That was not a coincidence. That was a manifestation. And we did this ourselves. So if you can go back and experience, then guess what? It wasn't a coincidence or an accident. It was an active thing that you did. And that if you understood it, then you could have a honeymoon for the rest of your life rather than for whatever short period of time you experienced it. And what was it? And the answer was, you were self-reflective, you were conscious, you were mindful. You didn't let the program run the show. I'll give you an example. It's a habit to get dressed. You don't need to think about how to do all the pieces of getting dressed. It's, you can do it blindfolded in the dark. You can get dressed without thinking about it. So I say, before you met this person that just came into your life, this fabulous person, day before, I say, how long did it take you to get dressed before you went out? And you say, well, 10, 15 minutes I was out of the house, okay? And I say, okay, now you're going to go on a date with this person who could be the soulmate, greatest lover in your life, and you're so excited. How long is it going to take you to get dressed for a date? And all of a sudden you realize, well, hell, now it might be an hour, 2 hours, you know? I say, what was different? Yesterday, unconscious, tape, habit, get dressed. Today, I'm looking in the mirror. I'm being self-reflective. I am monitoring my behavior. I'm monitoring everything. I'm not leaving it to chance. My conscious mind is running the show. And when you go to that table and you're having this conversation, how scintillating the conversation is, and how, like yesterday, you would have just said something and just, you know, talk without even thinking about it, just come right out of your mouth. But tonight, with this person on the other side of the table, you're thinking about the words. And you're creating poetry. I mean, you're going to say something and this other person is going to swoon fall on the floor because you're going to be so cool. And guess what? They did. And everybody swooned and everybody had love and all this kind of stuff. And I'm saying, what was going on during this period? And the fact was, you were monitoring yourself to make sure that your behavior reflected who you wanted to really be. The person you think you really are, you were going to make that person be there right now, and you were going to watch it being self-reflective, self-conscious, to make sure that you were this person. And therefore, at that moment, you were creating life from your conscious mind and not from the habits. And that break when you let go of the habits and started to do it with your conscious mind was a period that you would say, well, that was as close to heaven on earth as I could think.
And can it be sustained?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I want to tell you, I am so glad that I know about this stuff because I'm about now, let's say, 13 years on a honeymoon.
Oh, my.
And that's because when I got into this stuff, both of us knew that a good question I should ask myself and tell you then is, how come the honeymoon ends? And here's the answer. It's very important because at some point, life gets really busy as usual. And the job comes in, or I got to fix a car, or I got to pay the rent, and these thoughts start coming in your head. And so when the life thoughts that you've been putting off because you've been on this great honeymoon start to come back, they start to have your conscious mind zip around thinking, oh, I got to do this, and I got to do this. Well, then I'm saying, if the conscious mind is thinking about how you're going to pay the rent and fix the car, and your partner, your love interest that you've just been with and had this great relationship, comes up and taps you on the shoulder and asks you a question, and you turn around and make a response. Who's making the response? The conscious mind? The answer is no. The conscious mind's thinking about the car and the rent. The subconscious, yeah. And I said, whose program's in the subconscious mind? Oh, in my case, it'd be my dad's. Hmm. And all of a sudden, I turn around and use the subconscious program that my dad's behavior that was downloaded into my mind. I respond to my love partner with this other behavior, this other person, essentially. My partner stands back and looks at me and goes, who are you? Who's this person that just showed up here? And the reality was, and this is why the honeymoons are so hard to when they end, because if I just turned around and said something, and my love partner says, who are you to me? And I would think, what are you talking about? I've always been who I've always been. That's who I've been always. What are you talking about? Because I didn't see it myself. Remember, that's that Bill's behaving like his dad, and he doesn't see it. I didn't see it. So if I get accused of something, I'm the guy that's astonished more than anybody else. I wouldn't have done that. And so a relationship that had two people in it turns into a relationship with four people in it.
Mm-hmm.
The two conscious minds, and then the two minds that are operating from the habitual programs downloaded from other people. And the honeymoon is effectively over at that point because it's like, God, this other behavior is not what was brought into the relationship to begin with and now manifests itself. So can you change it? And the answer is yes, because the subconscious mind is a tape recorder. So you can change it, but you cannot change it by just talking to it because there's nobody in there to listen to you. It's a tape recorder.
Hmm.
So a lot of people think, well, I just give myself a good talking to, and I'd say, here, try this out. In the old days, you know, but now there are CDs. I say, okay, here's a recordable CD. I say, put the CD in your CD player. It's playing a program. Push play. It's playing a program. And I say, you don't like this program? And I say, okay, talk to the CD player. And you'll realize you can talk until you're blue in the face. CD player is going to still play the same program. Why? Because there's nobody in there to listen to you. And the subconscious mind is like a CD player. It'll play the tape.
Hmm.
And you will get mad at yourself because sometimes you'll even see the tape playing and then say, how? You know, it's like, oh, God, I'm out of control again. And the fact is, no, you got the CD player here. So you want to change the tape.
But can you change it? I'm kind of fascinated by this jump that you were talking about. And can we change the tape collectively? And one more thing I wanted to throw into that picture is with the Internet, I often think the Internet is like training wheels for like a global intuitive leap.
It is the nerve system to hold all the cells of the body in one body.
Okay, and then, but it's one body, and that's collective.
Humanity.
So I'm thinking, while you're talking, I'm going, isn't it kind of contagious to shift out of the subconscious programming? Can that not be, passed on?
It can be passed on. The whole thing, the first thing we have to do is just first at least get the awareness of this.
Right, okay.
Because without the awareness, here's the truth. I'm Joe, average Joe. I walk down the street with my desires to have success in whatever I'm talking about, mm-hmm. and all this woe is falling on my shoulders, and I'm thinking, well, the universe is against me. Why? Because I wanted to have success, and look what I ended up getting. And then what does that make the average Joe person say? Well, I'm a victim because it's not what I wanted. I wanted this other stuff. And so I didn't, you know, so obviously nature is against me. But then I say, no, wait, let's become educated, become aware that you're operating 95% of the time from this invisible habitual program that you got from others, and that these are where the limitations and all the problems come from. And so it makes a difference from the first view of, oh, I'm a victim because I wanted this and I got that. Turns out the next understanding says, currently I'm a victim because apparently my behavior that I'm not seeing is sabotaging me.
Mm-hmm.
And if I change that programming, then I can be the master. You can rewrite the programs. And here's the fun part. You put the right programs in, all the right win-win, love, and harmony, balance programs in your subconscious. You know what the fun part is? You don't even have to think about your life. It will automatically, unconsciously take you to the top of the pile because the subconscious does it anyway without you working on it.
Hmm.
So the fun part about it is if you would have gotten the best programming in the world, you could have daydreamed your entire life away and been the ultimate success of the planet. And that's...
But now we're having to really create it.
Well, we have to know that that's how it works. Then I recognize, well, maybe our programs are not supporting us, and that if we rewrite the programming, then automatically it will turn our life around. And just to give people a little hint here, don't have to aggravate yourself and irritate your life by going over your history. It's not relevant for a simple reason. You're operating 95% of your life from the subconscious. So your life is a printout of your programs.
Right.
And what it says is the things that work, work because you have built-in programs that encourage whatever that is. The things you struggle with, you're struggling with because you have conflicting programs that are not going to support that destination. So it's really neat because now it says, okay, save a lot of time. Don't go back in history. Look at your life at the moment and then focus on the things that aren't working and recognizing the most primary reason for them not working the way you want them to work. It's not outside forces, but invisible subconscious programming that you were downloaded with before you were even conscious.
Well, that helps a lot, actually. So how do we induce the different subconscious? How do you put programs in? Well, I know we've had lots of instruction, but I want some more.
Okay, well, this basically, the first thing is, it's principally a habitual mind. That's why reading a self-help book doesn't change it, because that's not a habit. If you read the self-help book every day, you know, for X number of some period of time,
mm-hmm.
if you read it like a habit, it will become a habit. If you read the self-help book once, the conscious mind became aware, and it had no effect on the programs in the subconscious mind.
Hmm.
So anything that does habituation, but it has to be habituation with intention and almost a religious fervor, because it learns from repeating things over and over and over again.
With passion or with...
With passion and intention and just keep putting it in. And a little suggestion...
Mm-hmm.
The precociousness, the subconscious mind is like a precocious 5-year-old.
Mm-hmm.
And it responds to you in a sense of how you respond to it. If you get mad at yourself, which frequently most people do, including myself in the old days, when I find myself, you know, I give myself a good talking to. Bruce, that's enough junk food. Stop eating that stuff. Go eat healthy food. And then a minute later, there's a Krispy Kreme donut in my hand, you know, and I'm going, oh, you stupid idiot. You know? And what happens is this. If you want a child to work with you, you don't yell at it and get it upset that it wants to run away from you, more or less. You give your child praise and commendation. And then it works faster.
Hmm.
And I learned this myself because, like, that kind of thing where I'd find myself doing the same old behavior that I kept talking to myself about, and then get mad that I couldn't control it and get angry at myself. One day I changed tactics. It was so this day, I looked down, and after giving myself a good talking to, I find a Krispy Kreme donut in my hand. You know what? For the first time in my life, I realized instead of my usual behavior, which was, oh, you stupid idiot, there you are with a stupid donut in your hand, mm-hmm. I stopped and I said, thank you. For what? What was I thinking? You showed me the donut in my hand. Why was that relevant? Because then I had the conscious point of saying, put the donut down. And so then when I look at it, I said, just, oh, I've got it. So don't yell at yourself. Just, you caught yourself with the donut. That's good. Put the donut down. And then say, that was great. I caught myself. The next time, before I even got my hand on the donut, you know, my mind started to say, stop. Look where you are. Your hand's about to touch the donut. Conscious mind comes in and says, oh, good, good. I don't want that donut. And pull my hand back. Every time you repeat this, and it happens much faster when you do it this way, much faster, the mind will catch it at an earlier step to the point when it's gotten such good commendation for being so alert to bring my attention to this that it actually will not go there again.
That's great.
But if you yell at yourself, you've made it worse, and you're sure as heck find maybe two Krispy Kremes in your hand the next time.
Well, and we're almost done, and I don't want to be, but I know you've got a lot to say, but I would like you to bring it to the miracle stage on our planet, if you will. I love that part of your book. The book's great, everybody. Spontaneous Evolution. It's just a wonderful, it's called Our Positive Future and a Way to Get There from Here. It's
The fun part about it is here we are on a planet with almost 7 billion people, and we're destroying everything ourselves. The whole world is beginning to go through this mass extinction process because of what we're doing. And it's a real interesting opportunity because this is this time where the evolution process is giving us that donut in the hand look, saying, look where you are. Mm-hmm. You have a choice. And our choice at this point is that we can start to do things differently. And they say, well, how can we do them? What plan? You know, I mean, obviously the things we've been trying don't seem to be working. As a matter of fact, they're making things worse. And then I go, here's an interesting point. There's a civilization with 50 trillion citizens in there. 50 trillion citizens. We got 7 billion is a drop in the bucket. You got 50 trillion citizens in a civilization that runs so wonderfully and harmoniously that all 50 trillion citizens can be blissed out at the same time. And I say, well, where
without
is this?
Without a donut.
Where is this? Yeah, and the fact is, what I'm saying is, underneath your skin, we're actually made out of 50 trillion cells. The cells are the living entities. We've seen ourselves as I am Bruce, the human being. Well, the human being is actually not a single thing. The human being is 50 trillion cells living in community. And the relevance about it is virtually every cell in your body has every function that you have. Every cell has a digestive, respiratory, excretory, nervous system, reproductive system, even immune system.
Wow.
And so what's real about this is every cell is the equivalent functionally of a miniature person. They can live outside of your body, which is my job when I was cloning cells from people and putting them into culture dishes and studying them. And they're like, they live in community and they live in harmony. And then I tell you this very simple fact. Inside your body right now, you got 50 trillion citizens. Every cell of age is working, employed. Every cell gets paid. Every cell gets health care. That it's under protection, and there's joy and love that can go throughout the entire system. And it's a truly an environment, and this is true, where no cell is left behind. And why this is important is they have an economy. They have an equivalent of money. And if you understand how they have politics, and how they have economy, and how you can get 50 trillion. That's 8,000 times more people on this planet. 50 trillion citizens that could live in harmony, then the old phrase, the answers lie within, becomes very valid because it says, look how they have an economy. Look, they all don't get the same pay. They get paid commensurate with their jobs. Neurons even get paid so much they have an entourage. Skin cells are, you know, just getting through. And they're all different, but they all get covered, and and it's like the answers that we need to live with just a few billion people, if we look at the politics and economy and how it works inside the body of a healthy human and apply those principles, we will create a world that would be exactly that same nature of harmony and happiness and bliss that a human body can experience.
And you're saying that collectively we're lined up to actually be able to do that.
we are in the stage of that internet that opened this all up so we can talk around the world and everybody can get this information down, that everybody can become aware of, look, you were more powerful, you can walk across hot coals, women lift up cars. If a child's been in an accident under a car, there's so many stories I use in my lecture and showing that women can lift up a car. It's like, yeah, go out into the parking lot and lift up a car. And you think, what, are you crazy? Nobody can do that. And I say, when that child is under that car, that woman lifts up the car without thinking about it.
That's a not so intentional, or that is an intention.
It's an intention.
Yeah.
It's an intention of our power when you stop questioning yourself.
Mm-hmm.
But we have always been programmed to question, who do we think we are?
Mm-hmm.
And when we answer that question, it's usually not a very high level of authority. You know, it's like, okay, I'm just a guy here. Just don't bother me.
Okay, yeah, I want to be humble. I want to be... Well, we could talk for another hour, but unfortunately our time is up.
Because this is so cool, because people are... this is important, because at least if they get this understanding that there's more to their operation than the conscious mind is letting on,
mm-hmm.
that if they understand this mechanism and how it works, they can become the master of the program rather than the victim of the programming.
Right on.
And it's necessary, because we need our powers back.
Mm-hmm.
And if we collectively can get our powers back, you go out there and just take a survey of the world. 90% or more of the people would most likely say, if you ask them, what do they want? They want just some peace, some harmony, some food, a job. And it's like these simple things. And guess what?
And love.
And that would all come together with this bliss thing if we became able to create what we all really wanted rather than what we've been programmed with.
Wonderful, wonderful. So it's time for us all to really consciously share that with everyone around us, too.
It is, because as we start to make our own lives really great, which you can do by changing these programs, and they're just fabulous. Go to my website, brucelipton.com. There's a column called Resources, and there's a whole list of different modalities and ways to reprogram the subconscious to get your power back.
Mm-hmm.
And the significance about that is, if you start doing this and you start to realize how all of a sudden you're walking off the ground, you're walking in a world that other people might be losing their heads, and you seem to be like in this sunshine garden while the rest of the world is in a craze, is because you've actually started to manifest your creation, and the rest of the world will look at you and say, I want that.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll be able to then be, one of the facilitators of cultural creatives.
Wow.
That will help us get out of this matrix and let us create the world that we as a group want, not the individuals that control it, but as a group wants peace and harmony.
Wonderful. You're very inspiring. And we'll check your website, brucelipton.com. And maybe you'll come back and see us again. I'd love that.
Oh, I would love it, because we're just, as I said, we're just getting into this evolution, and it's going to unfold, and it's going to be scary if you have no idea what's going on. It's going to be very scary for those people. So it's really a time.
We're going to call for you to be back on soon. I'm going to get hold of Sally.
You do that. I want to be here, because we're going to talk about it. It'll be fun to say, what has happened since the last time? And I bet you a lot will have happened.
I bet a lot has happened. Bruce Lipton, thank you so much. You're very inspirational for a lot of people. So
Veronica, I still appreciate the opportunity to talk with you and all the wonderful cultural creatives out there that are thinking differently. Thank all of you, because that's where the evolution is coming from.
Thank you, Bruce.
Thank you.
Good night.